Hi, it's Leanne Dolan, and my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical, is out now and available everywhere. People magazine chose it as an April pick of the month, one of the best this week. A hopeful take on commitment, they said, and an innovative story about marriage. Sounds juicy. The Marriage Sabbatical, out now, available everywhere.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters.
What's a satellite sister?
The person you call when the best thing in your life happens or the worst.
The person that gets you up, gets you going, and gets you through.
And every once in a while, changes your mind.
This podcast is part pep talk, part weekly check-in.
Like grabbing coffee with a friend.
Thanks for being here. Welcome to the Satellite Sisterhood. We are the Satellite Sisters. Welcome to the show. This is Liz Dolan. I'm in the Wondery Sunset Studio in West Hollywood, California, all by myself here today, Jewel. Leanne is on assignment, as they say. Leanne has today off.
Right. So are you, how are you doing there by yourself,
good,
sister?
Good. Okay. Yeah, not totally. Of course, we have Sergio here, who takes such good care of us. Sergio, our engineer, okay. Sergio Enriquez. But but it's tense when Leanne's not here because she's the boss, you know? And we want to make sure we do a good job even when she's not here.
That's right, Liz. It's a lot of pressure. We know she's going to hear the show. Hey, I guess I should introduce myself. I'm Julie Dolan. I'm the oldest sister. I'm an empty nester, an urban nana. And today I'm coming to you from my closet in Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Yes, oh, that must be nice. That
trying
must be beautiful.
To extend my summer vacation. It's actually absolutely beautiful here. And Liz, can I just start off by, because I know I sent you and Leanne, possibly Sheila, a text as well about how wonderful it was to see on our Facebook group all the photos of the Edna Dolan 4th of July blueberry muffins.
It was so beautiful. It was so sweet.
It was so sweet. And I texted you and I said, I know our mom would have been so touched to see those blueberry muffins all over the country,
right.
You know, in all kinds of different situations, you know, and that was really fun. Certainly next to Thanksgiving, 4th of July was one of her big holidays.
For
and she
sure.
went all out. Mm-hmm. And I know she'd be very happy thinking about all those blueberry muffins out there in the world.
Yes, it was very emotional. And some good looking blueberry muffins, I got to say. There were a couple of funny fails that people cop to, but mainly some delicious looking muffins.
Really, really outstanding blueberry muffins. Well, honestly, our moms never looked quite as spectacular as some of those. But
there were a few people.
But good work. Yeah. All the way around, people.
All the way around. So we do have a very full show for you today. We're starting at the sports desk because there were a couple of really wonderful sports things going on over the course of the holiday, especially for women. Then a brief visit at the foreign policy desk, right, Jewel?
Yes, geopolitical flashpoints, Liz. Okay, now I know Leanne would never have allowed this in the rundown, but we're going to do some today.
Okay, all right. But it's going to be anecdotal geopolitical flashpoints, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. All fun. Just we're going to have a lot of fun with those flashpoints.
And then we're dropping way down to Tuesday trends. You've got a few.
Well, I have some excellent ones that I think everybody can get on board with.
All right. And then I have two travel updates. One was one is about my travels with Hooper. We just had like a 10-day road trip, a couple of lessons about traveling with your dog that I wanted to share, or questions, really. And then another, I have a brand new goal of a place I want to go in my travels.
Oh.
And it's... Okay. And it's New York City. But I'll tell you why. A place I've never been in New York City that now is right at the top of my list. But first, let's just talk about that Women's World Cup team. Yay, rah, rah, USA. It was so emotional, wasn't it?
I mean, it really was thrilling. The stakes were really high. They rose to the occasion. And
yes.
It was thrilling to see them win. And, you know, it's just a great story.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Rose... Yeah.
You have a real background with Women's World Cup and with the women's soccer team. So
yeah.
What do you
Well, I do. You know, first of all, it was super exciting to watch the final on Sunday, but I watched the semifinal with our brother Dick earlier in the week because I was in Bend, Oregon. We were just like laying around in his living room watching the game, having fun. And he said his favorite player was Rose Lavelle. So he's like, she's got it all. And you're like really raving about Rose. So I was so happy when she scored in the final. I felt very personally connected to her at that point. Plus, I just really loved the personal power that all of the women on this team show, both as individuals and as a team. You know, so they're our first Satellite Sisters of the Week today because, you know, we just love them. And especially the team spirit they have. You know, we've always said at Satellite Sisters that, like, interdependence is where it's at, right? Being able to count on each other, stick up for each other, defend each other. And you could just see so much of that spirit in the way they played the game. So that was cool. But you're right. I do have a personal connection to this event because 20 years ago, when I first left my job at Nike, I was running marketing at Nike, and I left there. It's when we were starting to invent Satellite Sisters, but as which was, you know, not so much a paying
gig. Which was still in the closet.
It was, right? Yes.
We had to keep our day jobs during the period.
Yes. So my day job, the first gig that I took was to run the marketing for the 1999 Women's World Cup, which, you know, that was the fantastic opening game at Giant Stadium, the closing game at the Rose Bowl, the big Brandi Chastain moment, like all of that. I was very engaged with that whole thing as a marketing project, but also as a cultural moment. And I worked with a business partner of mine at Nike, actually also left the company at the same time, Rosemary, who you know, because she was also helping us start Satellite Sisters. So Rosemary and I, and actually our brother Brendan, all worked on the 1999 Women's World Cup. So that was, you know, that great team of Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy and Christine Lilly. So, but there were great things about that moment. Obviously, it was a real moment in women's sports history.
I say that, Liz? Can I just interrupt? Because prior to that, I mean, people had pretty low expectations for, like, who would watch women's soccer, right? I mean, when you were brought in to do the marketing for that, it was a tough challenge because while it was a very popular sport in the United States, it wasn't like a lot of people came to the stadiums to watch women's soccer, or it wasn't a big television event the way we now just accept it as a big, exciting television event.
No, I give all credit to Marla Messing, ran that organization, the Women's World Cup Organizing Committee. She was I think CEO was her title. And she just insisted. FIFA wanted to put all the games in like little college stadiums. She's like, no, we are not doing that. This is our moment. We are going to put the games in big stadiums. And they were like, you're crazy. You are never going to be able to do that. So there was just a lot of pressure to sell like 10 times more tickets to every event that had ever been sold before. So that was a big challenge. She also insisted that the television network televise every game. They were only going to televise like the semifinals and the final. She's like, nope, you need to put every game on TV. And if it wasn't for her, like, we're going to do this, people. This is our moment. You know, I'm not sure we would have been in the big stadiums. We definitely wouldn't have been on TV that much. And you wouldn't have had this sort of historic moment where everyone got to remember the game was tied 0-0, 0-0 after extra time. And then the U.S. sank all five penalty kicks to beat China. And there were 90,000 fans at the Rose Bowl and 18 million TV viewers. So it was just like a moment. So here we are 25 years later. And I love the fact that that cultural moment has moved on to something even bigger, because that was a real U.S. moment, but I'm not sure like it changed the rest of the world. But this time around, do you know there was a 25% increase in the global television ratings for this event? And you can see it. I had friends who went to various parts of the tournament around France, and they said it was fantastic to see how many Americans turned up, but it was also especially fantastic to see how many people from around Europe turned up to see their own teams and root for their own teams. And a lot of, you know, fathers and sons and things you wouldn't necessarily have seen with women's football, as they say, 20 years ago. So to see all of that, to see how great all the teams were from around Europe now, it's just like, it's just more competitive. That's what you want.
Yeah, that's the thing. The play was so exciting to watch. Every match was really very exciting. Yeah.
And my friend Rosemary, the aforementioned Rosemary, who worked together with us on the 99 World Cup, she's now been back at Nike for a while, and she's in charge of all women's marketing for the entire company, including this World Cup. So she was in the stadium at Lyon, and she was texting me, and at the very end, she texted me just a video of all of the fans staying and cheering and just going crazy, and it was just like, it really got me choked up to see how much it had really continued to grow in the 20 years since 99. And it made me very emotional that it was like, it was still growing. It's still all the women from all the teams were just out there just doing an awesome job. And all of the fans were so engaged. So, you know, you just have to love that. The only thing.
So Liz, let me ask you, where do you think it goes from here? Do you think it gets even bigger?
Or what? Yeah, I think it can get bigger. I mean, there are still plenty of parts of the world where a woman playing any kind of sport is not really accepted or encouraged. And look, even in the United States, the women get paid less than the men. That's obviously been a big issue. I think they were really out to prove in this tournament, not only that they were the best in the world, but they could like drive the entertainment factor. Look, we've got the TV ratings. We've got the jersey sales. Like, what more do you want from us? And I feel like they really delivered that message. Like, come on. They are actually a more profitable team for U.S. soccer than the men's national team. So, like, they went out there, they had a lot to prove, and I think they did it. So, who knows where it can go?
They did it. Yeah. So, I know they're getting a big ticker tape parade in New York. That's exciting.
Yes.
And I guess they're going to be on some kind of victory tour. So, hats off to all of them. I mean, that was really, really exciting.
Yes. Okay, we will just leave that there. I was going to bag on the men's national team for a little bit, but I'm not even going to bother to do that.
Don't do it, Liz. You're filled with a positive spirit.
I am. Okay, so Women's World Cup team, our first satellite sisters of the week. Now you have another, Julie, from the sports desk.
I do have another one, and that would be the 15-year-old sensation Coco Gauff, who made her just a spectacular showing in the tennis tournament, the Wimbledon tennis tournament. She's 15 years old, Liz, and that was what was so great about it. She was so 15, and then she wasn't at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, in the first round, she beat her idol, Venus Williams. And at the end of it, she was in tears because this was the woman that she had looked up to. You know, this is the woman who had inspired her to want to play tennis. And to meet her at Wimbledon and to beat her, I mean, it was amazing. But without a doubt, to me, the most exciting part of it was the third round match she had against Herzog. And I have been in and out because I've been out hiking here in Steamboat. So I actually I did not watch the match. But I knew the final score, and I knew that Coco had won. And when I sat down to watch the match, I still could not believe how she won. I kept saying, because she pretty much lost the match and then turned around and won it. I mean, I kept saying, oh, well, I'm sure she's going to turn it around at any second, and she wasn't. So it was spectacular for her. It was to see her grit, to see her determination, her skill, her talent, and to have it be a young star, Liz. Yeah. I mean, we haven't really had that on the tennis scene.
Right.
A lot of our, the big players now are in their 30s. You know, they've been around for a while, and to see her just on the court was, is really exciting. And I hope she has a great, great career. But I have to say, one of my favorite parts of it has to be her parents, and Liz, you and I have been to tennis matches together, and if you've watched it on TV, you know that usually the family, the friends, the coaches of the players, tennis players, they sit there stone-faced, right? They wear sunglasses, they wear hats, they don't show any, rarely do they show a lot of emotion.
They try to control themselves. It's considered more polite, I guess, but not as entertaining as what we saw here.
I mean, with Coco's parents, they were like A-Y-S-O parents. I mean, they were in pain when she was behind in the match. But then when she started to come back, when she tied it up, they were cheering her on like every Little League parent ever. And it just, it made me so happy to see. You know, they were just how much support she had, how much they were so excited for her. That was really, really fun.
Yeah.
So I hope she, you know, she's going to be playing in the U.S. Open. And it's a lot of pressure because she's mm-hmm. only 15, mm-hmm. but we hope to see her again. And so really a great week for women athletes, for female American athletes, just all the way around two great satellite sister stories, I think.
Yes, yes, for sure. And if you haven't seen any of those moments Julie's talking about, the parents in the box, it's all over Twitter and all over the internet. Just Google Coco's parents and you will get to participate in like the agony of defeat, the joy of victory, the whole thing, the roller coaster. It is really, really fun to see. Okay, the last big thing, so Coco's a satellite sister of the week. Next satellite sister of the week is Southern California's own Dr. Lucy Jones, because we had a couple of earthquakes here.
I know, but you weren't even in town, right, Liz?
No, I was up in Oregon, but we all got a text from Leon the moment it happened, right?
Right. Leon wrote a text that said, crazy, because she had gone to the Rose Bowl to see some special event about the Apollo 11 landing.
Right.
So she said the bowl was a freaky place to be. Sheila weighed in, our sister Sheila. She said she needed a weighted vest because
to calm her down.
Rolling so much. Leon said the whole Rose Bowl was swaying. It was really a scary situation for a lot of people. We thank everybody on Facebook who checked in. Southern California sisters that. Those were big earthquakes.
Yeah, yeah. I was, I was glad to be away. But then again, I was like, what's happening in Santa Monica? If Leon and Sheila are both talking about like the giant waves and whoa, that was a big one. And lots of other people on Twitter saying, wow, I never felt anything like that. I texted a couple of my neighbors in my building in Santa Monica, just like pretending to care about how are you, but really wanting them to just tell me how the building was.
Yeah, your whole building, you have all that nice.
You know how friendly we are. Yeah, yeah. No, but first I texted my friend Deborah across the hall, Deborah, and I was like, hey, I saw a big earthquake. Like, how you doing? Everything cool there? And she was in Chicago with her dad, so that didn't help at all. She's like, oh, there was an earthquake? Let me look into that. Then I texted another neighbor, Paula, and who was home. So she reassured me that everything in Santa Monica was cool and the building was good. And so I felt a little bit guilty that she immediately knew that I was asking about the building, even though I was pretending to ask about her. But anyway, that's but
that's,
you know,
a whole nother story.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a lot of action here. So if you watched any of the news coverage of the earthquake, you saw Dr. Lucy Jones, who is a seismologist for the U.S. Geological Survey for 33 years. She's sort of been the voice of earthquakes in California,
yeah.
Right, Jewel? Even when you were here, you lived here during the Northridge earthquake. She was probably still the person in charge.
She was the one providing the expertise.
Yes, yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm very familiar with Dr. Lucy Jones. I mean, in other parts of the country, you have your go-to people for hurricanes, the mm-hmm. forecasters that you can really count on for hurricanes or, for tornado forecasting or tracking. Well, in Southern California, it's Dr. Lucy Jones.
Yes.
She is your earthquake expert.
Yeah. And I have actually read her book that came out last year. It's called The Big Ones, How Natural Disasters Have Shaped Us, and more importantly, what we can do about them. So I'm not going to take you through all of her tips because really, there's not that much you can do. I mean, come on. But one thing she says here, which really stuck out to me, she was talking about what our policies need to be and how to prepare our cities. She said, but policymakers need to focus on the what, not the when, which is, that's what you hear from your husband, the geologist, a lot.
Yes,
right, Julie?
I have a resident geologist,
yes,
who was tracking both of these large quakes. And his quote was, these are large quakes. Okay. And And of course, the next question is, well, you know, does this mean, you know, there's going to be another one? You cannot predict earthquakes. That's the problem. So keep that in mind. But he is intrigued, Liz. That's the word that he used, by the location of these these earthquakes. You know,
really?
Because they're farther east, that they were not on the San Andreas Fault, and that perhaps the working theory that there's, you know, the kink in the San Andreas Fault, that there's, you know, it's all sort of locked in there. So in order to relieve pressure, things are moving farther east. He's intrigued with that
theory.
But he's not.
is that like
he's
hearing?
He's not adhering to it. He's not promoting it. He's intrigued with it, Liz. He said the last time, 1872, there was a Lone Pine earthquake that's happened, and that was a sizable earthquake, 7.4 to 7.9, 27 people perished in that. And he was talking to some of his other geology friends, and they said it might be very interesting to be around in Southern California in another million years to see how different the coastline is going to look.
Oh, in a million years. Okay. And what if we can't wait for a million years?
Or 100 million years. You know,
Geologic time.
But
yeah.
It's also important to remember, Liz, that this earthquake, according to my husband, that the activity that we've just seen east of the San Andreas Fault, that this activity doesn't indicate any increased risk for the San Andreas Fault. But that's because it's already a super risky fault. So there you have that.
Okay, that's your good news,
Does
bad
that make
news
you feel better?
Scenario. No.
There's no good news. There is no good news where you live. You live in a highly active area, Liz.
I know.
Things are happening out there. You know?
I know. My neighborhood is actually designated a liquefaction zone. And that's just not where you want to be living when the big one hits. But what are you going to do about it? Didn't know that when I bought the place. Anyway, one last thing I want to say about Dr. Lucy Jones, because I just love her. It's like she doesn't age either. Have you noticed that? Just like
it looks good,
but I was.
I mean, I'm aging, but she's not. Maybe it's just all this work with seismology keeps you young.
Something is keeping her young. So I was rereading her bio last night, and it said a research associate at Caltech. She holds a PhD in geophysics from MIT, and get this: this was the surprise, a BA in Chinese language and literature from Brown University. Okay, I went to Brown, so that was exciting. But Dr. Lucy Jones got her BA in Chinese language and literature. So there you go, people. You know, I appreciate the humanities, literature, look at that. And she's gone on to greatness in science. So it can be done. It can be done.
All right. Well, we just stay safe out there.
Yes.
That's all I can say. Make sure you have your earthquake bag. Do all your preparations, you know.
Yeah.
So
otherwise, there's nothing else we can do. Okay. We're going to take a break to thank a few sponsors. And then when we get back, Julie's at the foreign policy desk. Don't tell Leanne.
Liz and Leanne here. And we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow. We love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life, aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going.
Oh.
Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the Mega Moisture Duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer, and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz. Your youthful glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code Sad Sisters. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code Sat Sisters at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code Sat Sisters for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
All right, we are back, and when Julie sent me her notes for today, this one was under the category of geopolitical flashpoints.
Flashpoints, Liz. I thought that would get you going.
Yes, okay.
But no, I wanted to tell you about a couple weeks ago, I went to a lecture at the Bush Presidential Library, and the title of the lecture was Geopolitical Flashpoints. Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty sexy. But I was invited, and my husband and I were invited by Ian Bremmer, who was one of the speakers. Ian Bremmer is a professor at NYU. He's also head of the Eurasia Group. You may have seen him. He's on TV all the time talking about geopolitical flashpoints, Liz.
Okay. So we're going to get a short course via Ian Bremmer.
All right. But so the presidential library, the Bush Presidential Library is beautiful. If you're in Dallas, you should put it on your list of places to go. They always have interesting exhibits. They have great speakers. I have been there one other time to hear some North Korean defectors. So I was very happy to go back. But this time, because we were going as the guest of Ian Bremmer, we had met him much earlier when we were living in Moscow, and it was very nice to extend us a VIP invitation to come hear him speak.
Wow!
So we got to go to the VIP reception ahead of time, Liz. You know, that's the little wine and cheese thing that they have, and you can talk to the speakers. So I was pretty psyched about
that.
You
get your flashpoint sneak peek. Yeah,
that's right.
Behind the scenes.
So here we are, you know, we're hobnobbing at this little reception, and I went to get a glass of white wine, as you do at geopolitical flashpoint receptions, you know?
Yes.
And so I went over, and the bartender took out this cup. It was a plastic cup. It has a lovely American flag on it, presidential kind of seal. Uh-huh. But he poured my wine into a sippy cup. It's a presidential sippy cup. You know, it had the lid, it's identical lid locking system that I use for my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. That's what they serve drinks in at the Bush Library, because apparently they do not want people spilling, you know, red wine on the carpet,
right.
Or white wine or a mixed drink. So they serve everything in presidential sippy cups.
Oh, okay. Good insight behind the scenes.
Which is really,
do you get to keep
it? Unusual.
Yeah.
It was a first for me, Liz. Uh-huh. So I was excited. So we have, you know, I'm sipping my sippy cup, and they said, okay, now it's time to go into the auditorium. And again, because we were Ian Bremmer's guests, we got to sit in the front row. So we went in the front row, and I sit in this chair, Liz, and my feet don't touch the ground. So I got my sippy cup and my feet are dangling this chair. And I'm like, what is happening here? You know, I felt a little like Alice in Wonderland. Have I like shrunk or something?
Yeah.
But then it just dawned on me. Because again, I've sat in this auditorium before. It seemed like regular, very nice auditorium seats. But the front row, Liz, they have essentially thrones that people can sit in. And because they have a lot of people who are used to sitting on thrones coming to the Bush Library to hear various speeches and participate in various conversations. So the front row of the library is that these seats are, well, they're quite something, Liz.
So the seats are usually held by, say, heads of state.
Not your husband. Not me. Not satellite sisters with the presidential sippy cup.
Okay.
But there I was. So
I'm liking it.
A little unnerving, but I got my balance. I sort of steadied myself in the throne. And I'm not, it was fascinating. He was speaking with Ian Bremmer and Neil Ferguson from the Hoover Institute, two like super duper smart guys. And what I would have to say is they were beyond politics, their analysis, their insights. They were equally critical of, you know, the current administration, the previous administration, the Clinton administration, even the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. They just see patterns and things that, you know, were very useful. So six things from my flash points that you need to know.
Flash points. Okay.
Number one, here we go. So it's sort of a lightning round for you, sister. One, Russia, of course, meddled in the last election. And two, Russia is meddling again. So that's the first flash point. Two, both of them said the rise of China is bigger than the fall of the Soviet Union.
Oh, okay.
Think about that. Three, this is the scariest one, that China has leapfrogged in technology in the last 5 years. Mm. That they are so far advanced in technology, it is something for us to really be alarmed about. And I wrote down in my little notes when I got home and put my sippy cup down, the word AI. Need to learn more about AI, because they were talking about that.
Do we actually have to learn it, or can they just learn it and tell us about it?
Well, we need to understand what it is, Liz, and what the implications are. Okay?
Got it. Okay.
So put that on your
AI. Got it. AI. Artificial intelligence, people. Okay.
Next one. Then we have a new Cold War going on, China versus the U.S.
Yeah.
But here's the other part of it, but maybe not with Europe. Like, Europe is not necessarily backing the U.S. right now in our Cold War with China.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, you've seen that. They're buying technology from China that the U.S. doesn't want them to buy.
Right.
Okay. Continuing on.
Okay. That was a flashpoint.
Yeah.
Fifth flashpoint. The Germans are now see the U.S. as a bigger threat than either China or Russia.
Well,
Germany. Okay.
I feel like there should be some follow-up questions here, but we may not have time in our lightning round.
No, this is, I just had to take a sip from my sippy cup when he said that. I was like, whoa. Then finally, and this is not good news, Britain, Brexit situation, it's really doomed.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
It's all doomed. So that was it. But it was a fascinating night. I, you know, enjoyed being there. I was honored to be there, to sit on the throne, to drink my white wine out of my sippy cup. And you can follow up on any of those geopolitical flashpoints.
Okay. Yeah. Just Google any of that. Okay. Thank you, Julie. That was very well done. It's nice that this is what you do in your spare time. You go out to learn more about geopolitical flashpoints.
We don't live overseas anymore, but I'm still very much interested in what's happening around the world. And it's interesting that the experience of living in Russia is still really relevant to understanding what is happening in Russia today.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, there you have it. All right, I want to move on to another flashpoint, more in American culture. We kind of waded into this a little bit a few weeks ago when Leon brought up the whole alternative milk flashpoint. Like, what is really milk? Is a nut milk a milk? Does it have to be from a cow or a goat? We had some opinions on that, a little bit of a debate, you know, and I can see why that's debatable, like what the word milk should be applied to. But then I saw another article last week that is like, okay, now wait, no, this is a bridge too far. This is a story in Vox where the headline is Mississippi is forbidding grocery stores from calling veggie burgers, Julie. So
I don't understand that.
Here's what they're saying. You can't apply the word burger to anything that is not slaughtered livestock. So you can't say veggie burger or even vegan hot dog. Words like burger and hot dog would be permitted only for products of slaughtered livestock. Proponents claim the law is necessary to avoid confusing consumers. But given that the phrase, I don't know, veggie burger, I don't find that confusing. Do you?
I don't find that confusing. I'm more confused, like how are they categorizing a tuna burger, Liz, or a salmon burger, you know, because that's not necessarily livestock. But those are definitely burgers, right?
Right. They are burgers. I think we get to apply the word burger wherever we want. I think it's different.
Anything between a bun, Liz, is a burger. That's...
or a lettuce inside the lettuce wrap, if you're going that way. You know.
Okay. Yeah. That's right.
I just wanted to bring that up. Like, there are plenty of things that are worth debating. I don't think this is one of them. I think we get to call anything we want a burger, and you don't get to pass laws about this. Okay, can we agree to that?
Again, is this the highest and best use of our taxpayer dollars that we're passing?
No.
Is this because meat burger makers
sure.
are feeling threatened by veggie burgers?
Yeah. The same way the dairy people are threatened by nut milk. So I understand the motivation. I am not going to be following this law.
And so what are you supposed to be calling those veggie patties then?
I don't know.
Are you able to use the word patty?
I'm going to have to call
Is that outlawed too?
I'm going to have to call the American Civil Liberties Union, Julie, to find out about what can we use the word patty without risking incarceration. So anyway, we can move on. I just want to put that out there. No. A burger is a burger is a burger. I get to call anything I want a burger. Okay.
Okay, Liz. Okay. Well, it is Tuesday. Even if in the summer we have Tuesday trends. I'm hard at work scanning the universe to find some trends for us. And the first trend I have up, Liz, is something that I think maybe everyone that's participating in Operation Sea Turtle can really get behind. This is a trend that started in Sweden, and it is because the Swedes are so advanced in so many ways that it has an athletic component to it, Liz, but it also has a social responsibility aspect to it. So you got to love that.
Mm-hmm.
The new thing is called plogging, Liz. P-L-O-G-G-I-N-G.
Plogging. Okay.
And what you do, you can do this as an individual plogger or you can do group plogging. It's up to you. But what you do is you go out for a run, and as you run, you pick up trash that you see along the way on your route.
Oh.
You're plogging. Okay, you're running, you're picking up trash, And here's the really good news. I don't think this is true, Liz, but this is according to the World Plogging Headquarters, that people who plog, if you just run, you're burning like 400 calories an hour.
Uh-huh.
But if you plog, it's 575 calories an hour. So it's actually better for you to do that.
Until you just fall over and hit your head or something. That's what I would worry about. The constant leaning over. Yeah. I lose track of where I am. Whoa. Next thing I know, I'm by the side of the road, laying on the ground.
Well, Liz, now you could squat. You could do a squat when you go to pick it up. I think it's something that we can get behind. I mean, it's popular in Sweden. They're trying to make this a worldwide thing. So start plogging in your neighborhood. Okay.
And you know what? This reminds me, this is more than 20 years ago. This would have been the late 80s. Again, back in my days at Nike, I remember having a conversation with Joan Benoit Samuelson one time. And, you may remember Joni, first woman ever to win an Olympic gold medal in the marathon, Maine's own Joan Benoit Samuelson. And we were talking about like her career and how she started running and all of that. And she said back in the day when she first started running, long training runs because she was a marathoner, it was so unusual to see she's like a teenage girl, young woman on the road running by herself, that when cars went by, she used to lean over and pretend she was picking up garbage, Julie, because she thought it was too weird to just be out there running, that people they wouldn't think she was so weird if she pretended to be picking up garbage. So we can at least be grateful that that has changed. She went on to win a gold medal. So nobody thinks it's weird to see women out running anymore. But it used to be such an unusual thing that she pretended that's not what she was doing.
She was picking
up. She was plogging.
The original plogger.
She was the original plogger.
I think when there is a plogging museum, there will be a statue to Joni Benoit. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, Liz, this second trend comes to us from one of my friends. Grace Ann sent this to me, and I wanted to know if you want to get on board with this.
Although
I know you're not going to want to, but get this, Liz. Airports are now opening up their terminals for tourists who just want to hang out. Okay, so here's an example at the Pittsburgh International Airport. Almost once a week, Chuck Hughley brings his granddaughter, 3-year-old granddaughter, to the Pittsburgh International Airport. And they ride the trams, they go on the moving sidewalks, they look at the planes, they stop in at one of the concession stands, and they're able to do this because they get what is known as a non-traveler's pass. Now, I've never heard of this.
But no, me neither.
You can, apparently, in certain participating airports, Pittsburgh is one, Tampa, they're considering doing it at SeaTac, the Seattle airport. Atlanta is also considering it. Detroit, I'm very happy to hear Austin is looking into this as well. And somewhere between 50 to 100, 150 people each day are issued these non-traveler's pass. So you have to go, I guess, check in somewhere to get one of these. You have to go through security. So you still have to go through the whole screening mechanism. But then you get to spend time looking at the beautiful art installations at the airports. You can, many airports have, live music.
I know. Portland does. Yeah, yeah.
Microbreweries.
Yes.
They have playgrounds. What do you think, Liz? Would you like to go to an airport on your day off?
There is no amount of money you could pay me to voluntarily go to an airport when I'm not flying. Like, I can understand if you never fly. There's a lot of entertainment in an airport, for sure. And starting with the planes. If you're a kid looking at those planes, it must be super cool. But I didn't know there was anyone left in America that didn't go to airports a lot anyway, because when I'm on a plane, it looks like everyone in America is already there flying somewhere. But yeah, I am not the target audience for this. How about you, Jewel? Would you ever do it?
I'm actually intrigued with this idea. The urban Nana in me, I think this would be fun to take your grandchildren to the airport. Like a really hot day during the summer, a rainy day. Hey, let's go to the airport. Let's go look at some planes. The kids love those giant concourses.
Yeah.
They love the moving sidewalks. Austin, they always have live music playing in that airport. That's a fantastic. They have barbecue in there, Liz. It's delicious. I mean, I would do it. It's like taking kids to a mall and not really shopping, but just letting them run around in the mall. I think it can be very enjoyable.
Go ahead.
I don't know, as like a frequent traveler, if that would bother you that like the people in front of you in the security line are not there for an actual flight.
Oh God, I hadn't even thought of that. Oh my God. Oh, okay. No. Yeah. That had not dawned on me. They need their own line then. Get your own line. That's
okay. Okay. You heard it from Liz. Get your own line. Get off my lawn. Okay, Liz. Okay.
But it does, I can see why it does have a certain theme park quality to kids. Because I remember like when we were kids and our mom would take us into New York City, we would take the train into New York, which was super exciting. Yeah. And then we would come into Grand Central, which was a pit in those days, by the way. But our favorite part of all of New York City was the escalator that went from Grand Central up into the Pan Am building. Oh, we could just ride that escalator all day. And it was right under a wall that looked like a wall of Legos to us. So all of the rest of New York City, we were only marginally interested in, but the escalator from Grand Central to the Pan Am building,
just chock full of fun.
Fascinating.
So perhaps this is coming to an airport near you and you might want to take advantage of it.
Okay. All right. Well, those are two good trends, Jewel. The plugging?
I can see you're never going to do the airport one, Liz. I can see that.
No, but
I can see you think that's a terrible idea, but you're just trying to be nice about it.
I am.
Thank you.
I am.
But plugging, I think you could do that, Liz.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, I do have a couple of travel observations, other than the fact that you shouldn't voluntarily go to an airport and get in my way in the TSA line. But we're going to take a little break here to thank a couple of sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, yeah, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox.
And we are back. Okay, I mentioned that I did some traveling last week, Julie. It was a long road trip with Hooper. And it was over 1,800 miles. I drove from here to Palo Alto, California. I'm mm-hmm. working on a work project that meant that I needed to be at a track meet for a couple of days at Stanford. So we were at Stanford for a couple of days, and then we carried on up to Bend, Oregon. And then I driving back to California, I stopped to see a friend in Santa Cruz. And then, boom, I got home on Sunday night. So it was super fun travels with my dog. But it was the first time ever that I've experienced a multi-day hotel stay with Hooper while I'm working. In other words, like, what do you do with your dog all day when you're going to work and you can't exactly
So you couldn't take him to the track meet?
No.
Legs are too little.
His legs are too short. I just had visions of these world-class athletes tripping over my little dog and, like, a career-ending injury because someone didn't see Hooper because he's so short and just tripped over him. So it's the first time I've ever just, like, put the Do Not Disturb sign on my door and then... I was out for, like, you know, 6 or 7 hours. What are you going to do?
Liz.
I know.
Okay, and Hooper is not kennel trained. He's not, like, sleeping in a kennel.
No.
He's just lying on the bed watching TV going in the minibar, right?
Yeah.
Now, well, were you in a pet-friendly hotel?
Yes, of course.
You were in a pet-friendly hotel.
I was in super, super friendly, as a matter of fact. They were very happy to see him. But I just, you know, you're kind of afraid that, like, what if he just barks all day? What if, and they make you, when you sign in with a dog, you have to give them, like, your cell phone number so they can text you if your dog is barking all day.
If they are barking.
Yeah.
I've traveled with our dogs, and yes, we've checked into Holiday Inn Expresses where, like, if your dog is barking, and you don't come back, they give you all these warnings. There's going to be trouble there. So
did I just hear some barking in the background? Is that your dog? Did I just hear a dog bark? I thought I did. Oh, okay. No, yeah, I was, and one of these was a Saturday morning. So on a Friday morning, I don't feel so bad if a dog starts barking at 8 o'clock in the morning. But Saturday morning, you really don't want to do this. But anyway, I never got any kind of an alert from the hotel. I came back and you just open the door and you're like, I wonder what's happened in here since I've been gone. But it was fine. He seemed to be super good all day, both days. No complaints. So, you know, that was a good thing to find out. Then
That's good because that's an unusual situation. He wasn't in the, you know, your home where he knows familiar surroundings.
Right.
I mean, he could have destroyed the bed.
Yes. He could have done any of those things.
Right.
He doesn't normally do those things, but whatever. It was successful. Now, was he barking for hours at a time? It's possible. I mean, how are you really going to know what happened while you were gone? You assume that if it's really bad, if somebody complains, the hotel will text you, but nobody did. Whatever. So,
did you leave the TV on for Hooper?
No, I didn't. Should I have done that?
Well, I mean, just sometimes there's some noise.
Yeah.
So in case he is barking, people, again, and they walk by the room, is that the TV or is that a dog barking?
See? Oh, okay. Good idea. No, my friend Ralph, who I was working with on this project, he asked me if I had left the TV on because he said he leaves the TV on for his dogs all day, every day. So, yeah. Okay. So that was number one. I guess it went okay. No complaints. All good. But then number two, this was a super pet friendly hotel. So everywhere I wanted to go in the hotel, mainly, I could bring him. There was a nice big outdoor dining area. He could sit at the table with us when we were having dinner at night. There were a lot of greens around in the parking lot. We could walk. We were sitting by the pool. Dogs are welcome there. It was like, this is great. Really, well-behaved dogs get to go everywhere. And, you know, I think that's fine. But at one point Friday night, there was a group of us sitting outside working, and then the entertainment started by the pool, and there was a singer, and we were trying to have a meeting and whatever. So we couldn't really hit, we were yelling over the singer, and we thought, well, that's not very nice. So we went to go move into the bar, which was actually quieter than being outside, to complete our meeting. And we got all settled in, and then the bartender came over and told me that dogs are not allowed in the bar. And I just
you don't have to show ID or something?
I don't know.
Is it part of the liquor license that you can't have dogs around?
I do not know. I was trying to think of what the rationale is for allowing the dogs like in the restaurant, an outdoor restaurant, but the dog could be in the restaurant, but not in the bar. Do you have to prove the dog is 21? Very few dogs live to be 21, you know?
I can't explain that. And the bartender didn't know.
Yeah. And right.
So that meant poor Hooper had to go back to the hotel room. Right?
Which was fine. I mean, it's not like I don't feel entitled to bring my dog everywhere I go in the world. I just thought it was funny that he was allowed everywhere except the bar. It's funny. Anyway, so that is that. Travels with my dog.
Well, it's probably better he doesn't take up drinking anyway, Liz. Okay,
travels with my dog. And then the other travel thing I wanted to mention, my number one travel goal now is going to be to get to New York City. Because have you seen all of the articles about the brand new Statue of Liberty Museum that opened last month, Julie? This place.
I have, Liz. It looks great. I've been to the Statue of Liberty fairly recently with some of my grandchildren. It's part of my urban Nana experience.
Uh-huh.
You know, we take the ferry, we do the Statue of Liberty, we do Ellis Island, we do that. But I have not been to this new museum, so I think I want to add it to my list. But you're a former New Yorker, Liz. You obviously have been to the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island before.
I have never been to either of those two places. No.
Really?
Apparently I should be one of your grandchildren, Julie, because No. When we were kids, Ellis Island didn't exist, but obviously the Statue of Liberty did. And I remember the one time Mom and Dad attempted to take all of us to the Statue of Liberty. We got on the ferry, we went out to Liberty Island, and it was closed because they were painting it, like painting the stairs inside. So it was still cool to be on Liberty Island, but nope, never went up in the Statue of Liberty. And then after 9/11, they closed it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then every time I go to New York, I keep thinking, oh, I should do the Ellis Island Museum, which people say is fantastic. Have not done that. And now they've got this, you know, spectacular looking historic museum out there. I think it's time that I finally get myself to the Statue of Liberty Museum.
Liz, it's a fantastic visit. I'm sure it's only greatly enhanced by this new museum, which looks great.
Yeah.
give yourself the, if you're going to do it, give yourself the time to, you know, to really do the museum, to do Ellis Island, to do, you know, to climb to the top of the Statue of Liberty, Liz. You
yeah,
can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait. So many of you listening may have already tried this. I know we have a lot of people in the Northeast and also a lot of people that just vacation in New York City. If you've been to the new Statue of Liberty Museum, I want to hear about it. So join our Facebook group. You know, we always ask you to post with hashtag Sat Sisters Travel. We love to see everywhere you're going, and you post some great pictures. So if anyone has been to the new Statue of Liberty Museum, I want to know about it. And, you know, I'm headed to New York at the end of the summer for our niece Ruthie's wedding. So I'm thinking maybe I need to make a res. I don't know if there are reservations involved. Anyway, I'm on it. Statue of Liberty Museum. Sign me up for that.
That's good. Well, as my granddaughter Alice says, Nana, you have a phone. So Liz, you have a phone. You can find out about making a reservation, right?
That's okay.
That's what she said to
well,
me.
Alice is right.
All right, Liz, here is something else you need to put on your list. I have 10 reasons why you and all the Satellite Sisters need to go see the movie Yesterday.
Good.
Yes, you've heard about this movie.
I've seen the trailer.
It's out now.
Yeah.
Okay. You've seen the trailer. Yes. Okay. Reasons 1 through 4 is the movie is chock full of Beatles songs. Okay. Just it's great music. It's the Beatles.
Yeah.
So do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Reason number 5, the director of this movie is Danny Boyle. Now you may know him from the other delightful movie, Slumdog Millionaire,
uh-huh.
You know, where
loved
he is
that.
Always the theme of the triumph of the little guy. Well, that's all here. The writer of this movie Yesterday, Richard Curtis. Perhaps you are part of the multiple club that have seen 4 Weddings and a Funeral.
Yes.
Or Love Actually.
Yes.
Multiple times.
Yes.
Have you seen, right?
Yes.
So that's who wrote the movie. That's who directed the movie. You know, you already know the vein that they're tapping into. This is going to be solid enjoyment. You don't have to worry about that. Reason number 6 is Himesh Patel, who plays the struggling musician. And I don't know, Liz, have you ever watched the popular long-running British soap opera EastEnders?
No, but it seems like every British actor ever was on that show, right? You always hear like this person in this new movie, oh, they've been on the cast of the EastEnders forever.
Okay, so, well, he's adorable and just winning and just, you know, you're rooting for him. So that's all I'm saying there. Reason number 7, Lily James. We love her from Downton Abbey.
Yes.
And Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. Have you seen that movie?
No,
you haven't, Liz, but you could add that to your list of summer viewing. And
isn't
and you would enjoy, because again, Lily James is delightful. Okay, so she's in the movie with Himesh Patel. They're cute. Reason number 8, Ed Sheeran's in the movie, Liz.
What?
Okay. Yes, Ed Sheeran's in the movie. And he's
playing himself.
Good. Okay. All right. He's good. Now, I know you're going to love reason number 9.
Yeah.
Kate McKinnon. Kate McKinnon is in this movie and she's just darn funny, Liz.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's
over the top and it's just, it is hilarious. Okay.
So she lifts up everything she is in. That is for sure.
Okay. So you, and then reason number 10 is that just some of the plot turns are preposterous, but they're delightful surprises. And you can just go with this. So 10 reasons why you should go see this movie. And, you know, I read some of the reviews after I saw the movie and they were sort of lukewarm. You know, people were sort of, they are crazy. It's a solid gold movie.
Go see
it. I recommend it to everyone in the Satellite Sisterhood. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that is your Entertaining Sisters. My Entertaining Sisters this week is I'm going back to the Satellite Sisters Beach Bag book list for my next pick, because I'm slowly working my way through many of the books on that fantastic list. Mm-hmm. So my next pick is Mistress of the Ritz.
And, oh, yeah, that looked really good when Leanne described it.
Yes.
Why did you pick that book
to
read, Nick?
Well, it's historical fiction, which I really like. And this is the story of a real-life American woman who secretly worked for the French Resistance during World War II And you think, oh, you've seen that movie a lot. But no, you haven't, because she did this while playing hostess to the invading Germans at the Ritz Hotel in Paris. And so on the Beach Bag book list, Leanne describes this as part love story, part suspense novel, perfect for travelers to Paris or history lovers, that would be me, and just a fantastic story. So this one sounds like everything, you know, and it's by Melanie Benjamin, who also wrote The Aviator's Wife and The Swans of Fifth Avenue. So what is not to love about this recommendation? So Mistress of the Ritz, I'm starting it this week.
Okay, Liz, I think that's good. All the books that I've read on the list so far this summer have just been great. And it's a wide, diverse list. So whatever your interest is, fiction, nonfiction, we got a little of everything on that list.
Yeah. So check it out. We had a whole podcast episode, where we preview a lot of the books on the list, and we interviewed Jennifer Weiner, whose book Mrs. Everything, of course, shot right to the top of the bestseller list once we recommended it. And then the blog post on our website at satellitesisters.com, Leanne put together a longer blog post with more books on it. And I notice a lot of people looking for book recommendations, even in our own Facebook group. So just go on over there to satellitesisters.com and you'll see lots of book recommendations. And if you want to post your own inside the Satellite Sisters Facebook group, go for it. Because we know we have
some big thinking there, Liz. Good work. Yeah.
We have a heavy reading crowd. We like to encourage that, yeah, all about the entertainment, movies, books, whatever. Okay, so let's see. We're getting close to wrapping up. We want to thank our engineer, Sergio Enriquez, who I mentioned at the top of the show, always is here for us and makes us sound great. Our sponsors today, and remember, we always put links to our sponsors. If you look in the show notes, which you can do by just swiping your phone or hitting the cover art, you'll get links right there that you can use. That's our special URLs, so they know we're the ones that sent you. So you can do that there, and there's a longer blog post at satellitesisters.com with more show notes. And then what else? Time for our to-do list, I guess. What do you have going on?
I've got a big to-do this week, Liz, because my women's weekend group, these are my college friends, and that we have been meeting for decades. Once a year we get together. It's a true Satellite Sister experience. And they are coming to Steamboat Springs. So this is the first ever for this group. We always meet on the East Coast. Everybody lives on the East Coast except for me. I've invited them for years to come to Steamboat Springs. But this year, they're actually coming, Liz. So I'm very excited about this. Of course, Colorado in the summertime is delightful, fantastic. There's a lot of fun things to do. But for me, always as the host for the weekend, you have to balance, like, we could do everything. We could hike, we go to hot springs, there's a balloon rodeo this weekend, there's a rodeo, there's, you know, you can ride bike, you know, you can do just any amount of things. But we always like to leave a lot of time for just conversation. Mm-hmm. And the most successful women's weekends we've ever had sometimes are when we don't do too many things, but when we, you know, when we allow time for conversation collectively, in small groups, we always share a list. We make a list of all the books and movies that we've seen for the year that we recommend. And so I've got to balance that. And I obviously have to make beds and do a little bit of cooking, but I'm very excited about them coming.
That sounds great. Oh, that is super fun.
Yeah, you guys,
this group has just been together forever. You really make time for each other, which is such a beautiful thing.
Right. Well, and now it's a little easier because most of us are empty nesters. You know, we're in a different part, stage in our careers. I mean, you know, when we first started this group, it was hard to meet because we had little kids, we had jobs, nobody had any money. I mean, it was hard to make the time to meet, to do this. So it's nice that we have this long tradition and this deep friendship.
Yes, that is nice. Okay, my to-do list. I'm going to be getting up early tomorrow morning, Jewel, because Megan Rapinoe and the whole team, that ticker tape parade, you know, you can watch it live online. And
oh,
so
you can?
I'm going to
do
that. Yeah, I'm looking at the listing right now online. It starts at 9:30 a.m., which, of course, here in the West would be 6:30, but totally worth it. because they really did it. So NBC4 New York is going to be live streaming it, you know, and ticker tape parades. What's better than a ticker tape parade for
Liz, are you going to recreate it in your home with Hooper and maybe just throw some printing paper around or something like that? Could be very, very festive.
Well, they have explained that there's really no such thing as ticker tape anymore because there are no tickers anymore.
It's all digital trading. Yes, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So they just shred paper. It's just shredded paper. So I do have a shredder, Julie. I think that I might be able to recreate a little bit of that in the home.
It's, okay, Liz, that sounds really fun. Or maybe just do it around your apartment building. All your neighbors, I'm sure, would enjoy a little ticker tape parade. You're on a higher floor. You could do that.
Just throw it down onto my downstairs neighbors. Oh, my God. Can you imagine what they would do? Anyway, you know.
I think it's an idea, Liz. It's a big idea. You've had a couple in this show.
So the fantastic women of the U.S. Women's National Team in the Canyon of Heroes tomorrow along Broadway. It goes from the Battery to City Hall. I think that's worth getting up early for. So that's what I'm going to do. So there you have it. We have a big week ahead of us. And
we do.
Thank you. That was a good show, Jewel. Look at that.
It was fun. Liz, see, we did it all. We did it from veggie burgers to geopolitical flashpoints. There you have it.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to go to Satellite Sisters for the story of who we are and why we do this and a lot of other things. You can check in on it. We are the Satellite Sisters. Don't forget, call your Satellite Sister.